started out as a child and grew up in the streets of Philadelphia playing street football and everything. It was a marvelous time. And let me tell you about my pair of shoes. The first pair of shoes I ever had that I played football in, street football. We didn't have any sneakers. There was only one kid in the neighborhood that had a pair of sneakers. His name was Rudy. I'll never forget it. Rudy came running by us so fast.
What was that?
I don't know. It was something fast. You know, and he came up. How you doing, gang? How's everything? It's good to see you. What do you got on?
I got on sneakers.
See, that thing make you run fast. You can run, stop on a dime. I'll give you that sense of change. And I can keep running. Do you see these little rubber balls on the side there? Yeah, well, they keep me from making sparks, setting my pants on fire, because I run so fast, you know.
But we always had, like, a second pair of shoes to run in. Second pair of shoes used to be the best pair. But now you go and you get a good pair, and they become the seconds, you see. You wear out the sole, take them to the shoe repairman, and instead of putting leather on, he puts on a rubber sole, which is cheaper, and at the same time, better for you to run in, because rubber, you can stop. So there's a difference the way they put on the sole. Now, leather, they sew. Rubber, the shoe repairman tacks. So when you run and play, you don't wear the sole out as fast as you wear out the heads of the nails that hold on the sole. So when you do wear out the sole, you know, wear out the nails, the sole flaps down. And when you walk, it's embarrassing, because your shoe flaps. You know, you flap, 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 like that, you know. Now, if you got a pair of corduroy pants on, you turn into a one-man band. You know, flap, 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 that kind of thing. And these shoes were great, because if you see a quarter, you don't have to bend over. You know, just keep walking. Great pair of shoes. We played street football right there on the street. And this is where we had the greatest quarterback in the world. Our quarterback, he had to control 23 men on a side, and he was really great at it. You women don't know anything about it. You played with dolls and stuff like that. But here's a guy with an ingenious mind. He'd call a football play like this. He'd always get down on one knee and draw things. You know, he'd take a Coke bottle top. Now, Shorty, this is you. This is a Coke bottle. I don't want to be the Coke bottle top. Okay, what do you want to be? I'm going to be the piece of glass. Okay. Now, listen to this now. Arnie, go down 10 steps and cut left behind the black Chevy. Philbert, you run down to my house and wait in the living room. Cosby, you go down to 3rd Street, catch the J bus. Have him open the doors at 19th Street. I'll fake it to you.
You always have one fat kid they never thought. What about me?
You go long.
You have a lot of good plays going like that. I'll throw it over the water tower. You'll catch it as it bounces out.
The water bottle, which is a great memory. We kept a water bottle in our refrigerator to drink from, you know, drink ice water. And there's a funny thing about it. As long as somebody's in the house, you always go to the refrigerator, you pull out the water bottle, and you get a glass, and you drink out of the glass, see? But when nobody's home, you never do that. Go right to the refrigerator, pull it out, drink right out of the bottle, you know. And my mother used to get so upset, man, whenever she'd catch me drinking, you drink out of the bottle? No, I didn't drink out of the bottle. How come there are breadcrumbs in this water here? You know, that kind of thing. Really great. And you never drink all of the water, because you got to fill the bottle up. You leave about a quarter of an inch in there. Yeah. Nobody touches it. Everybody dies of thirst, you know, after that. Christmas time. I remember my brother and I, James, we slept in the same bed, not only at Christmas time, but always. And, you know, parents are funny because kids have a great time. It's like around 9 o'clock at night. That's when kids, I've really had a great time. We were laughing and giggling and bumping our head. You know, having a great pouring water on each other. And the first thing the parent says, you're getting silly. Go to bed. You know, they don't understand. You know, why? How come we're having fun? No, we want you to look like us. Be evil, smoke, drink, you know. That's kind of thing.
But
Now, I remember waiting for Santa Claus, and Santa Claus to me was a great man. You know, gifts are coming, and wondering if I had been good during that time of the whole year and everything. And we couldn't wait for Santa Claus to come, and your heart's really dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. You know, Santa Claus is coming. I wish he'd come now, you know, and the clock stops. It just stops. He never comes. She said, well, now, for Santa Claus to come, let's go to sleep now. Yeah, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Try and go to sleep. You know, run upstairs and jump into bed. You ever really try and go to sleep? Nothing. You know, and then you start talking. You kids better be quiet. That's not us talking. We're not talking up there. You better go to sleep while Santa Claus is going to give you enough to put coal in your stocking. See, then it's your fault. He's going to put coal in your stocking. No, he's not going to put it in mine. He's putting it in your stocking. Yeah, and if he does, I'm going to tell him that you went to bed every night, too. And I'm tired of rolling over on the coal spot. I'll tell you that right there. No, we really had a great time, my brother. I remember my brother and I, at the age of 8 or 9, we had a great time. Because we used to think of our father as a giant. Now, every Saturday, my father would go out and really booze it up because my mother gave him an allowance of about $5, and he'd go down to the tavern, you know. They'd shoot darts and listen to Frank Merrill while on a crystal set, you know, stuff like that. And they'd sing, and he'd come home about 9 o'clock really loaded with beer, you know, and fun and everything. And he had a different attitude about him, you know. We'd wait in bed for him to come home, and we could hear him up, you know, from upstairs when he'd... speak to my mother. Say, hello, my dear. My wife. She wouldn't speak because he's juicy. You can hear him go upstairs. And boom, boom, boom. We look at each other and say, the giant is home. He'd go past that bedroom into his room, you know, and you could hear him trying to take off his clothes. He'd drop his trousers. Chink! The giant has money. We'd wait for him to go to sleep, and I'd crawl in the bed. Oh, merciful Father. You could hear him snore. When my old man drank and really got boozed up, you could... You know, and he breathed so heavy that the whole house, everybody in the house would breathe with him, you know. And he would do a thing that what you call chain stoking, which is you breathe and then you stop. You know, and he used to bug us, really. He goes, Dad! Breathe so we can breathe! Sleep. And my brother and I would crawl into the room. You know, it was a big operation for us. Heart thumping, boom, boom, boom. We'd go through his pockets and steal him blind. Man, we'd run back in the bed and jump,
split up the money.
85 cents in that room. Yeah, and he never caught us. Never did. No, one morning he caught us. He really did. The giant caught us. I heard him. He woke up, looked through his pockets.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. Who stole my dough?
Did you take my dough, wife? No, I didn't. The kids take my dough? I'll beat the kids for this. Let me get my belt. Leave the children alone. Why? You in it with them? Yes, I get 20%.
Oh, we used to take a lot from our dad.
I worked in the operating room, and doctors make mistakes like anybody else. You know, I'm not knocking them. They make mistakes. Now, what would a doctor say if he makes a mistake? You know, like, especially in surgery, when a guy's operating. Now, you know, a mechanic will mess up something. He's, oops, you know, that kind of thing. What's a doctor say when he cuts the wrong thing? You know, the guy's operating, and it's local anesthesia. You know, the guy's just awake down there reading a magazine or something. And, you know, they're operating on against
strobers, sheeps, crabs, sternocytes, shrags, oops.
And the patient said, what did you say? Nothing, just lie down. What did you say? Did you say oops? Oh, boy, I've said oops before. I know what I've done when I said oops. Now, what did you do saying oops there? You know, that kind of thing.
There was one guy that I always worried about, and that's the Lone Ranger buddy, Tano. Now, Tonto, to me, always was like, I would say to Tonto,
Why does he do the same thing? Because the Lone Ranger would always say, Tonto?
Yes,
Kemosabe? I want you to go to town. And every time he'd go to town, the bandits would beat the snot out of him. Oh, they'd give him, it's nice to have you in town, Tonto. And he'd go back, and the Lone Ranger would look at him, oh, my goodness, Tonto. Did you get the information?
Yes, me, I have information.
You know, that kind of thing. And I'd always holler on the radio, Tonto, don't go to town. They're going to beat you up again, man. Just one time. Tonto? Yes, Kemosabe. You go to town. You go to hell, Kemosabe. I want you to get the information. What is information? Information say, Tonto, no go to town. That's what information says. You ever figure out what would happen if these two guys ever went into a town and there was no violence? They had nothing to do but get drunk, you know. Lone Ranger and Tonto really knocked out, you know. Let me hear you sing it, Tom. Oh, shut up. Tonto, you have any money to get a drink with? No, Kemosabe. Why don't you use your silver bullets? Well, we better try and work on the bartender. Right, Kemo. Sabri. Bartender?
Yes, sir.
How'd you like to peek under my mask? Take a look at this. How about that, huh? And there's another problem that it involves. How about Silver, the Lone Ranger's horse? Now, the Lone Ranger thinks nothing of running and jumping on Silver and chasing after a bandit that has at least an 8 or 10 mile lead. And Silver must get awfully peeved at this, But it's embarrassing, to chase after a horse that has an 8 mile lead. And you can always say, last man, guess what is? The bandits have an 8 mile lead. Go get them. Don't worry about a thing. Took one horse. Hey, old Silver, wait a minute. You crazy! Get off my back! What's the matter with you, sir? Don't worry about it, sir. I'm sick of this. How much of a lead have they got this time? 8, 10, 35 miles? You know how embarrassing it is to come back in that state where those old snotty horses and say, oh, boy, did you catch him this time?
No, I didn't. I didn't catch him.
Sick of this. Look at these shin bones, the scars on my shin from when we catch up with those nuts and they run out of bullets and every time they throw the gun back at you, they don't hit you, do they? No. Right off the old Silver shin. Sick of this.
Is Ralph Jamerson at home?
Who?
Ralph Jamerson. No, there's no Jamerson living here. This is apartment 116. He lives down the hall, 114.
Oh, thanks a lot. Did I wake you up?
No, I was asleep anyway. You knock on this door again, I'll punch you right in the mouth.
Gee whiz, thanks a lot.
Yo, Ralphie, open up, it's me, Charlie. Open up.
Better try the knob, I know he's home.
Hey, listen, Ralphie. Ralph, did you... That's gas. Ralph, are you okay? I can't breathe. Better crawl on the floor. I got some of the guys doing it. Ralph, are you... The gas on, I can't see. Better light a match.
Thank you. I joined the Navy, and I became a medic, hospital corpsman. I was very proud. Instant doctorship. That's what it is. In 6 weeks, you can operate on people, give them needles, kill them, you know, that kind of thing. You know, we pronounce people dead. You're dead. Thanks a lot. Get out of the service. I never forget, when I graduated from hospital corps school, an order came through sending me to the Fleet Marine Force. This means I am going to be a medic. I was very proud of it because I know that I read the Geneva Convention. It's a small print and everything. It says, in the Geneva Convention, you cannot shoot a medic. And they're very happy about the whole thing. You know, they give you anatomy in one day. You know, here's the body. Look at it. Remember it. All right. Next shot. You know, that kind of thing. And so they give you a helmet with a big red cross on it, see? And then they give you a jersey with a big red cross on it. This is so when the enemy sees the red cross, see, they don't shoot at you. See, they just are red. There's a guy with a red cross. Don't hit him. You know, in times of war, they do that. See, don't throw that hand grenade over there. It's a guy with a red cross. What's wrong with you? You know, that kind of thing. See, well, they do that, see? Don't they? No, they're nice about it. So we're really proud of that. We can't get shot down. You know, that's one of them. So, then they show us the real movie as we're about to go to war, just before we land. I said, I want to show you this picture here. You'll notice that the corpsmen are dropping like flies. That's because the enemy is not upholding the Geneva Convention, you know, and they said the first thing they try and get actually is the hospital corpsman, and actually the lifespan of a hospital corpsman from the time his foot hits the water to the time he almost gets to the beach is 7 seconds. And, you know, the corpsmen are scrambling after that. Give me some steel wool. Get this red cross off of here. Anybody want to buy a helmet with a red cross on it, you know, for a gun? How about some morphine? Take this helmet for some morphine. You know, so I was aware of this. You know, I was really frightened. And I said, gee whiz, I said, I hope they don't get me, you know. And I run, they let down the thing, you know, bang. First thing I did, man, was scurry to the beach, you know. Jump in a foxhole, safe. I'm not moving. I'm sorry, I'm not moving. Five guys with me, and we're having fun. We're watching the war, you know. That's a nice war going on, yeah. Somebody's winning a firework. Ooh, look, a ship in the air, you know, that kind of thing. And there, an explosion went off about 100 feet away. And a piece of shrapnel caught one of the guys, you know, and zonked him right out. He's gone, you know. And there's a guy next to zonk means dead. And there's a guy next to me, typical movie nut. You know, I didn't even know they were real. I thought they were just in the movie, you know. Why? They got Johnny! Shut up. Be quiet, man. Watch the war, you know. No, they got Johnny, and I'm going to get him. You're not going to do nothing. Get out of the foxhole and shut up. I'm going to get him. Will you get? And he broke loose, and he runs nowhere but right out into the open, man. He's scurrying around. Where are you running? You know, whatever. And these guys, the enemy's hiding up in the trees having fun. You know. Anybody want this nut scurrying around out here in the open air, you know? And the first thing they do is blah, 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 and they gun him down. First thing this guy says is, medic! I said, what do you want? My leg! I don't make house calls. Take two aspirin and mail in the $5. It's a true story. Just to prove that people are weird, I went out and I bought a rhinoceros. And I put him in my apartment, you know, and I dug a hole and everything for him. And, you know, I refused to hang my head on his horn, you know, that kind of thing. And just to prove to you, some people are weird enough that they'll pretend that a rhinoceros in the living room doesn't excite them. Now, you get people like a guy walk by and say, oh my, you have a rhinoceros, huh? We used to have a rhinoceros. Take a rhinoceros for a walk, you know, and some drunk always gets happy. Oh boy, that's a weird looking dog you got there. Does he bite? Nobody will ram the hell out of him. Half man, half animal. Wolf man. Right? And here's a guy that I sympathize with because he can never remember his rhythm pattern. He's walking around as a normal human being, then the moon comes up on him. Now, a guy like that has got to be embarrassing to his family.
You know, he's sitting around eating dinner and the moon comes up. So, oh, Papa, you going out in the yard someplace, I guess. How about if he's getting a haircut, man, as a normal human being, right? Barber's giving him a haircut, and the moon comes up. Oh, hey, this is going to cost you an extra $8 after this. So I'll make it light around the legs, will you please? Speaking of death, I was thinking, now, they had a problem. Elaine May and Mike Nichols did a bit on funerals and how expensive funerals are. And I was thinking, you know, it's kind of weird that people should complain about the price of funerals, because it's your last thing anyway, and you want a splurge, you want a beautiful funeral. I do. Everybody does, you know. And I was thinking, like, it would be great. The silly thing, really, about a funeral is the fact that people go in and they see you in the casket, stoned away, you know, nothing but a rigor mortis face there, you know. And they look at you and they come out and they say, didn't he look like himself? Which is sickening, you know. Because, like, if you put yourself in bed like that and you're really set up, you know, lie down in the bed like that, people would see this. He's dead. They wouldn't say, didn't he look like himself? No, you know, people say, I thought you were dead. No, I was just sleeping like that. Well, don't sleep like that anymore. You know, because you look like you were dead. So, I was thinking now, for the people that always feel, didn't he look like himself? For $50, an extra $100 or something like that, what you ought to do is hook up a tape recorder, you know, and play it so you can talk to them as they go by. Hi, how have you been? Don't I look like myself? Aren't I wonderful? It's good to see you. You know, and just keep it running like that for those people, you know. And maybe for an extra $200, you name names, you know. Hi, Bob. How's the wife and kids? You certainly do look great. Don't I look like myself? You know, I'm sick, but it serves a purpose, you know. Because I can't stand, you know. So how'd he look? He looked dead, I'll tell you the truth. He really looked dead. But when I was in the, like I said, in the Navy, I was on a ship, and the thing that really caught my attention was a burial at sea. And it seemed like a cheap thing to do, because I didn't understand it. They put the flag over the body, see, and they marched the guy out, and they put it on the edge, and then they, you know, the chaplain or whoever's and then they, you know, and they dumped the body into the water. Well, the flag stays. I thought the flag was supposed to go with the guy, you know, and it must be embarrassing to a guy that dies, you know. It's a cheap thing to do to me, you know, put a flag over, you promise him he's going to sea with the flag, and then, phew, now for my next magical trick. So what I did was, one of the guys died at sea, and as rigor mortis was setting in, we clamped his hands around the flag, you know. And the guys went up, but they don't believe, phew, let go of the goddamn thing. What the hell do you know? He wants to go with his flag. He loves it, you know. Oh, that's a true. The Neanderthal man. Now, let's think back. Now, today, we know what to eat. You go into a restaurant or you go into your home and you say, what's for dinner? Let's have spaghetti. Let's have steak. Let's have some meat, you know. Now, a caveman couldn't say that because he didn't know anything about eating meat. He didn't know anything. He was just out there, you know, just right out there. Hey, I am a caveman, and I'm out here, you know, that kind of thing. And the rain would come down. He didn't know what rain was. Oh, what is that? You know, run and hide, you know, that kind of thing. So it's all right. It's soft. Feel it. Oh, yes. Isn't it wonderful? You know, and then a hailstorm would come down and fool them all, you know. Oh, hey, that hurts. You know, hard water. You know, that kind of thing. So I figured the only thing that they knew how to eat, you know, like the bushes were there for them. So they just eat bushes every day, bushes. And they must have gotten tired of bushes. You know, I guess, oh, this is rotten. These bushes, they're the worst bush I've ever had in my life. See, don't eat that bush because you'll get a rash from it. It'll make you break right out. It's terrible. You know, it's, get the bush and, you know, got, oh, boy, thanks. You know, any guy would go home from a hard day's work or doing something, you know, and he said, what's for dinner? Bushes. Oh, what? I'll die first. I'd rather die than eat bushes. You know? So then they had to go out and get something else. So some guy says, hey, why don't we try meat? And the guy says, okay. So then that's when they went out. But now they must have made a couple of mistakes. See, they must have attacked the wrong animals. So we see, basking away in the sun, two saber-toothed tigers. And one tiger talks to the other.
Hey, Arnold.
Yeah?
Don't look now. But over your right shoulder, there's a Neanderthal man sneaking up behind us. And he's got a stick in his hand. And he's gonna hit one of us.
Say what?
That's the same nut that hit me behind the ear with a rock and run like hell yesterday. You know, they killed Ralphie yesterday.
Ralphie? Who's Ralphie?
You know Ralphie, that weird saber-toothed tiger, lives over the hill. He only has one saber, and he growls with a lisp. Says, "Arf." They killed him yesterday.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yep. Then they cut his fur off and they threw him in the fire.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, and then they drug him out of the fire and they ate him.
What a bunch of savages.
I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's get up and start growling and making a whole bunch of noise. All right? What's he doing now?
He's eating bushes. That's what he's doing.
The first time ever televised, we ever had a game that was televised, we played against a school called Hofstra. The athletic director came into the locker room and he says, "Now listen, fellas," he says, "you guys are on television," he says, "and this is the first time for you." He said, "I am not really concerned with winning as I am with the fact that you guys are on television and there are certain areas of your body that you shouldn't touch because it's embarrassing to the people watching TV." So the guy says, "Yeah, okay, we know what you're talking about." So he made us sign an affidavit promising that we would not touch certain areas of our body. You know? So we ran out on the field. I don't know why it happened to me. First time I carried a ball, I went up to this hole, and I saw the guy on the ground. He's a defensive man. He was down, and I started to step over him. And just as I raised the left leg, he came up and really hit me. Wacko! You know, in the worst place. And I said, "Oh!" And I started to grab him.
"You'd better not touch any areas of your mind."
So I grabbed my head. And I went into the huddle, guys, and what's the matter?
"I mean, every baby."
And to make it look good, they bandaged up my head. That's the truth.
I want to tell you about Seattle, Washington, and I'm going. Seattle, Washington is a city, as far as the weather is concerned, they're a little backwards. And in Seattle, they have rain at least 365 days of the year, so therefore they don't know anything about the sun. As a matter of fact, they think that the sun is evil. You know, when the sun comes up, "What did we do? Is our town bad? You know, what have we done?" You know, and they go out and they cut a calf, you know, and put them up on a rock. You know, that kind of thing. But, no, that's the truth. And you can see them out there. They don't know the difference. You know, they're out there on the beach when it's raining, getting a rain tan. You know, they're out there. And they think the more wrinkled the body, the better you look. You know, really. That's all. You look like a Bruin. "Thanks a lot. I appreciate that." You know, and you ask anybody from Seattle, "Do you like the sun?" "No." "Why?" "Dries up the sinuses. That's why. And I can't breathe." Got little gold slits on their raincoats, you know, stuff like that. And in Seattle, they had this gorilla, and his name is Bobo. And the veterinarians have been going mad trying to get Bobo to mate. This is the truth. Bobo is about 54 years old now, and it's costing the zoo an awful lot of money because he's the only gorilla that they have, and they want to get another one. So the way to do it is, you know, to call up a zoo, send up a female gorilla, and then they mate, and then they get a little gorilla, and then you do that twice, and you get a gorilla, and then the old gorilla can die off if he wants to, you know, which is less expensive than hiring Clyde Beatty to go out there and get you one, you know. So, and more fun for the gorilla, too, you know. But Bobo knows nothing about mating. You know, he just sits there. And, you know,
the vets keep saying, come on, Bobo, pretty soon you'll be too old. Not, you know, where you going? And so he just... And as a matter of prestige, too, other zoos keep calling up, and they know about Bobo, and they keep making fun of him. You know, it's, nah, 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 your gorilla don't know nothing, you know, that kind of thing. But the guys from the Philadelphia Zoo were very nice about the whole thing. They closed up their zoo, and they sent up their best-looking female gorillas. And she went into the cage with Bobo, and she was looking good, too. She had long black stockings on, you know, and some heavy eye makeup. And they gave her a girdle with hair on it, you know, and she was looking very shapely. She went into the cage, and boom, 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 boom. And he did nothing. He was just, And, of course, she stormed out of there. Well, this left the vets to try different methods. And one guy thought he had a good thing going. He went in, and he read them dirty stories. And that didn't work, even the parts underlined. And then another guy went in, and he showed him some gorilla stag movies. You know, where the gorillas have black tape across their eyes so you can't tell who they are and nothing like that. And he walked out in the middle of the stag movie, and the last method they tried was they took some darts, and they dipped them into this special gland secreting stuff that they got from an old sailor. There's a box marked Tijuana COD, you know. And they took the darts, and they threw them and hit them in the back. And the darts did nothing to him. He just pulled away and pulled them out, and he threw them away, and they hit a hippo. And the hippo went wild. I mean, everything, birds, trees, grass, and garbage cans. He was all over the place there. As a matter of fact, they have some of the weirdest-looking animals out in that zoo now. They have a giraffe with a hippo's head, and his neck can't hold the head up. You know, it keeps going down in the ground. That's a true story. You know, I'm crazy. Yeah. Thank you.